Molts són dentiners estens. Boktoku tu fuke no chui. Thank you. Limte de lingua hi extremo. Words are meant for meaning. The words that you use have meaning, whether you think they do or not, whether you're using them in one fashion or another. And I interpreted as part of my assignment today, I was asked to address, what are the words, cussing, swearing, that we should avoid using and why? I interpreted in that question a certain degree of specificity. So I'm going to not say the words. I believe that specificity is necessary so we know what we're talking about. Innuendo only goes so far. And just as fast as I can write them up on the board, I will probably erase them as far as the references are concerned. But I don't want anybody to be shocked by that. I think it's better to write it and erase it than to say it and have it either on tape or have somebody say, I heard Dad say such and such. And we already have, you know, issues where we think we hear things already. I've also been asked to include specifically the use of vulgar, sexual language, and innuendo. And so I don't intend on being gratuitous with the profanity today, but we all will make some direct references. And I really repudiate the notion or the idea that because you're a Christian, because Eric's a Christian, you know, and it's almost like it's prudish, where because he's not sophisticated worldly wise like us, he's not going to say this, that, or the other thing, as if somehow I'm blocked in, as if somehow in my upbringing I've had that rubbed out of me where that doesn't even come to mind. And I repudiate that. I could cuss and swear with the best or the worst of them, however you care to view it. But the thing is, I choose not to. I choose not to. Because rather than being prudish, I think it's spiritually prudent that I not. And there are some scriptures that are very, very plain about that. Words are meant for meaning, and they are only as good and useful for the meaning they convey. I want to read to you an excerpt from dictionary.com. It's the closest thing to word gospel that I could find. Dictionary.com, and this is in answering the question, what is Mrs. short for? And it's still up, I think it's still up on the site right now. But let me read an excerpt from that to just give you some idea that it's not just the words that we use, the letters strung together. It's the essence that is conveyed by those letters, by those words that are built together. Mrs. is a contraction derived from Middle English, the Middle English maîtresse. I sounded more French when I pronounced it. I apologize. Female teacher or governess is the definition for that. Once a title of courtesy, mistress fell into disuse around the late 14th century. The pronunciation, however, remained intact, and by the 15th century, mistress evolved into a derogatory term for a kept woman of a married man. So what once was a good, courteous reference wound up, because of its usage in the social vernacular, became a bad word. By the early 17th century, Mr., Mrs., Ms., and Miss became part of the English vernacular, creating an awkward sociolinguistic discrepancy. We've got this word that we use, but it's got this bad connotation. What are we going to do about it? And so this is what happened. In an attempt to avoid the use of mistress, a variety of phonetic substitutes have been utilized, including Mrs. or Mrs. While Mrs. does refer to a married woman, according to the Emily Post Institute, Ms. is the proper way to address a woman regardless of marital status. The term alleviates any guesswork. Miss is often used to address an unmarried woman, presumably a girl under the age of 18 years old. Note, however, that Miss also derives from mistress. So we have a word that was good, gone bad, gone good, and that we not infrequently use in our own everyday lives. It is this dynamic that we have to be mindful of. The language that we use now may not have been language that we could have used several years ago and may not be language that we can use coming down the line. Two, also, we cannot pour our individual meanings into words or references. Let me give you an example. Trying to keep it contemporary for the texters out there. Now, that could mean, oh my goodness, although I personally have issues with that. But that isn't what is generally meant when you see that texted, or you see that written, or you view that reference. For those of you who don't text, that's oh my ethereal authoritative figure. All right? That's the common usage. And when we're talking about words, when we're talking about phrases, when we're talking about language in general, the meaning is paramount. You know, we don't just sit around and talk to ourselves in our own foreign language and really feel like we've accomplished something. We use our language whenever we interact with other people. And when we interact with people, we want them to get us. We want them to understand what we have to say. We want them to understand the message that we have. There is immense power in words, and the few words that I spoke to start out with, it's to the power and utility of a few words well spoken compared to words that are just slung around that Paul refers to in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 19. There he writes, "I would that I could speak five words to you that you could understand, than 10,000 in a language that you don't." And I'll take it one further. I'd prefer speaking five words that were meaningful and upbuilding, edifying, than 10,000 that were either idle or destructive. It's very important that we think about what we're doing, because saying, well, I don't know what that meant, I don't know what that means, that's just plainly not going to cut it. That's the talk of the spiritually disengaged, and that's not what God's looking for. God's looking for us to be engaged in our lives and engaged in His service in our lives. There's immense power in words and in the spoken language. The pre-incarnate Jesus was known as the Word. So powerful, the essence that a word carries, that the Almighty uses it in reference to the pre-incarnate Jesus. The Word was the catalyst for all creation. See, I've heard thunder, and I've felt thunder rattle the house, and I've been witness to high-pitched frequencies breaking glass. It's a great curiosity to me, the words that God spoke, and God said, I don't know what kind of language He used. God said, let there be light. And there was light. Powerful. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. So we have individuals. Some people like to run other people down with their tongue. And the sad fact is that they'll eat the fruit. If we have individuals that love using language and using conversation to help build other people up, that's a good thing. They'll eat the fruit thereof. But it's a powerful, powerful thing. Life and death is in the words that we speak. And not just the words that we speak, but also the gestures we make, the texts that we send, the conversations that we have with other people. What do you mean by the words you choose? What is the essence that you're trying to convey? When I was younger, there was a reference. I won't bother to write this one up because I'd have to leave out too many letters, and I don't want to write the whole thing. But I called my brother a name. I knew it was a noun name, and it sounded funny. And I thought that it'd be funny. It was because he was acting goofy, so just a goofy sounding word for a guy acting goofy. And what it wound up being is it wound up being the male issue during the sex act. Is what it wound up being. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, my brother's not accustomed to me saying stuff like that. And he said, "Do you know what you just said?" And in my head, I'm like, goofy word for a goofy guy. But I honestly had to answer no. No, I don't. Well, he educated me. And I checked him on it, and he was right. Just last week, I was sitting at my desk, and I was part humming and part singing a song that I just heard before I came in for work that morning. And you'd have to hear or read an excerpt of the explanation of the artist that performed it. The group is The Killers. Brandon Flowers is the front man. He was the writer of the song. And the title of it is Human. Human. It's a catchy little dance tune. So I was sitting at my desk. I was kind of humming. I was kind of singing the few words in there that I knew, you know, and just, you know, humming right along. And one of the gals that works across from me says, "Huh, Eric's really singing today. I'm so glad she didn't ask me what I was singing because I didn't know. I didn't have any idea." So I tried to stop. Those things can sometimes get a hold of you. I was able to stop eventually. And I did some research and I found out that his explanation is kind of lamenting the fact and you know, the loss of devotion, marital devotion and otherwise, in the society in which we live. But you wouldn't know it by just listening to the lyrics, because the lyrics are ambiguous enough that you wouldn't be able to draw that necessarily out of the lyrics. And if anybody knows the lyrics, I'd be happy to discuss it with you. But it doesn't. That message is not clear to me. But I was still doing it. Why? I wasn't considering the essence of the message. It was a total checkout for me, and it shouldn't have been like that. Jesus was very plain about what should come out of our mouths. And in Matthew chapter 5, he's very plain about what he says here. And it's almost stark and abrasive what he says here. In Matthew 5 and verse 37, Jesus says, "Simply let your yes be yes and your no, no." But he doesn't stop there. It's like, it'd be a good idea if you just be plain speaking. He continues, "Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." That's pretty heavy. So maybe I don't get, or maybe I don't want to receive that message from Jesus, so I turn to James. Maybe James can explain it a little better. Maybe James can help me understand what Jesus is saying there, so that I can actually receive it and it will be palatable to me. So I turn to James chapter 5 and verse 12. And he's been saying a lot of good stuff here. All throughout this passage, he's been talking about being patient in suffering, and just having a Christian type outlook in general. But he finishes this passage by saying, Above all, my brothers, do not swear, and this is oath take in this context, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else, Let your yes be yes, and your no, no. And he doesn't stop there. He finishes, or you will be condemned. Heavy, the impact and power of our extra words. That we've got to be very, very considerate of the language that we're using. If you're speaking the truth, in other words, how much color do you need? If you're plain speaking and the truth is right there, do you have to fluff it up? Do you have to colorize it? Can you improve the truth? I think maybe the more burning question is, can you make a lie more convincing? And or can you portray yourself in a way that you think the individual or individuals around you would receive you better? In Matthew chapter 26, we have such an instance. Matthew chapter 26. Peter wants to be close to Jesus, but he doesn't want to be too close to Jesus. He wants to be able to witness what's going on, but he wants to be undetected. And so he goes into the courtyard of the temple, and he's milling about. It's cold, so he's trying to warm himself by the fire, apparently by the context. And he gets recognized. Well, you were with Jesus. Oh, no. You got me confused with somebody else. Another person, no. No, I know that you're one of his disciples. I've seen you with him. No. May it look like me, but wasn't me. Finally, the third person comes and says, no, you talk like he does. You're from Galilee. I don't see a whole lot of Galileans around here. I recognize you, and you were with him. And then he began to call down curses on himself, and he swore to them, I don't know the man. Oh, they believed him then, huh? Oh, that made it real believable. They still knew he was with them. What difference does it make if we're using language one way or the other, profanity, irreverence, using extreme types of language when it doesn't change the truth? We've got to be very, very careful about the way we use our words. Is what I'm saying, about to say, constructive? Is it productive? Is this upbuilding? We really have to answer those questions for ourselves as we are speaking and using references, using language and words with others. The profane and irreverent, or ungodly. Predominantly in the New Testament scriptures, as I understand it, no great Greek authority, so, you know, check out your Strong's, do whatever research, check me on it, let me know that I'm wrong. But predominantly, when you find the term ungodly translated in the New Testament scriptures, it's not atheists that we're talking about. We're not talking about individuals that don't necessarily believe in a God. The term is actually irreverence. Not holding authorities in the proper position or in the proper frame. Not honoring them the way that we ought to honor them. Not honoring institutions, i.e. marriage and the sex act. Not holding those in the honorable position and treating them with the honor that we should. And oftentimes, the dishonor, the irreverence, the profaneness occurs in our language. The term that's used most frequently, there's a couple of ways that profane are translated in the New Testament scripture. One is literally to cross the threshold. To cross the threshold. Either into something that you really, into a place that you really shouldn't be, or being in a good place and finding your way, stepping out of the place that you should be into a place that you shouldn't be. So that's what we're talking about. The other term that profane comes from oftentimes is to make commonplace. To make common when something was holy, when something was dedicated for a purpose, when something was special, and then you take it and it ain't all that. It ain't all that. Comedians make careers on sex jokes, just all through their material and references to it. I'd like to turn to Ephesians chapter 5. And begin in verse 3, but among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a man as an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Again, that's heavy. This is serious stuff. And we can try and fool ourselves, potentially. This term, coarse joking, the Greek on it is to turn well, to turn a word or phrase, to turn it well. And that's what's involved with the jokes. Oh, that was witty. Oh, yeah, that's what she said. That kind of stuff, those interjections, the spin on words that give it the innuendo. That's exactly what Paul's referring to here in regards to the coarse joking or the coarse jesting. Something that's well turned. It sounds smart because it is smart in an earthly, worldly, sophisticated way. But again, Paul's very plain in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. That's not what our wisdom's about. That's not the kind of smarts that God's interested in us having. He wants us to be smart spiritually. He wants us to be prudent spiritually in the things that we do and the things that we say. How does jesting become coarse? I'd like to turn to a passage that I up to this lesson, I'd never used it in the context, but basically all I'm doing is using Paul's observation here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And the context of this passage is in regards to the way that we should treat one another as part of God's body, that there aren't any unimportant among us, and there aren't. In fact, some of those that might be considered not so important are actually extremely important. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and beginning in verse 22. Those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor, and the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. We know this. Even the most profane in our society get this. Because even though you may not like the feel of your clothes, it's news when somebody walks down the street without any clothes on. It's news. Special honor. These two words denigrate sex and the woman's anatomy. This one denigrates your ability to eliminate your waste product. Now, Greg's probably seen it, and there are probably several others that have seen it, but I've seen more than one person who's not been able to use this. And you tell them that that's not something that deserves honor and respect and appreciation. It was coming out of their mouths It was actually getting all the way through their system, and then it reversed, and it had no other way to go because of an obstruction and or a neurological problem where the nerves just weren't going to pass it that way. The body's got to get rid of it somehow. You know what that looks like? You know what that smells like? You know how sick that person was? You tell me if you have a sexual dysfunction, how denigrating this word can be. I want to take this one a step further. If you've seen some of the opening scenes to the movie Braveheart, and you know, out there, there's all sorts of discussions in regards to that word in particular, being an acronym, not being an acronym, fornication under command of the king. You know, there was never any official English policy, apparently, where prima nocte was the rule of the day, where the English army had the right to go into Scotland and to have their way on the first night of a bride's life, of a bride's married life. But to witness that on screen, and we can discuss whether or not it happens, the fact of the matter is that individuals in authoritative positions all throughout time have done this. The victors in battle, American slave owners, and even Saddam Hussein's son, Uday, if I'm pronouncing his name right, Uday. Thanks, Lisa. She gives me the money. He actually stopped a wedding procession, took the bride for himself, took her back to one of his palaces, had his way with her, and put her back on the street. Husband shoots himself in the head. That's a serious word, and oftentimes it's used in a curse towards someone else. Would you do that to your worst enemy? This is why, these are the reasons why we don't use these kind of words. So we're to bless and not curse. And to treat these words as serious stuff, because they are serious stuff. You tell a woman who's been forced to have relations, been abused sexually, that's not a thing that deserves honor and sanctity. We need to make sure that we don't just cover up with the clothes, then expose ourselves in our talk. It's important for us to encourage others in our behavior and in our language to not let unseemly things hang out. I want to talk about some extreme language here just with a few moments that I have left. Boy, I'm mad as... How mad is that? I mean, we'll violate the conventions of our own language. That's like saying I'm as mad as the United States of America. Look at me. I'm irreverent. I'm sophisticated. We violate the conventions of our own language for the sake of our irreverence, for the sake of our profanity. It doesn't even make sense. What foolishness. A lot of times when people are irreverent or profane, it's because they're a rebel and they're not taking anything from anybody. What foolishness is that? We take stuff off of people all the time. If we didn't, we'd all be incarcerated. They would too. And as followers of Jesus Christ, we've been called to suffer indignations with grace. 1 Peter chapter 4. And And verse 12. Dear friends, do not be surprised at painful trials that you may suffer, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted because of the name of Christ, you're blessed, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. If you suffer, it should not be as a murderer or thief or any other kind of criminal or even as a meddler. However, if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear the name of Christ. For it is time for judgment to begin with the family of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? So I'm going to bite my tongue to keep it from wagging any longer. But I do want you to remember these words. Motsant. Detenez ascens. Words are meant for meaning. Botuku tufuke no chui. I like that one. Beware of profanity and irreverence. Limite de. It's multisyllabic. I got to get down here and really look at it. Lingwahi extremo. Be sure to limit our extreme language. Thank you.